Hey, what's up, everyone? Welcome to 21st Century HR Live. I'm your host, Lars Schmidt. We're kicking off week two of 21st Century HR Live. So thanks to all of you who are returning viewers. We've got a full schedule this week as well. So really excited to dig into that. Today, I'm going to be speaking with a good friend of mine, the CEO and founder of Exaquio, Susan Lamont. So Susan and I go back probably almost a decade now here in the DC and Virginia area before she started her own business. And so I want to talk to her about the work that she is doing in the field, the work that she's doing to support the community around COVID-19 resources, as well as what she's seeing. She's one of the leading experts globally on employer brand. And so I want to definitely talk with her about what she's seeing in terms of how organizations are adjusting and starting to shift how they think about employer brand during a global pandemic, which is a little bit of an interesting time to be talking about how you're selling and pitching and attracting talent to your organization. So with that, let me bring Susan on and we will get things kicked off. So Susan, how are you? Thanks so much for coming on.
I'm doing great. How are you, Lars?
Yeah, doing really well. For viewers that aren't familiar with you, I just gave a bit of background on kind of how we were connected. I think actually going all the way back, I believe Maren Hogan introduced us like a decade ago when I had just gotten to NPR to run talent, and you were at Marriott. So we go back a little ways. For viewers that aren't familiar, with you or want to learn more about your background, maybe you could start with just a brief introduction on you.
Yeah, sure. So I'm Susan Lamont. I'm the founder and CEO of Exaquio. We are an employer brand agency and full service consulting firm, and I particularly have spent my entire 2-decade career focused on how and why people work. So the relationship they have with work, the power of work, and why people come to work every day. I got my first W-2 when I was 14, and I had 16 jobs before I graduated college. So you know that work is in my blood, and I know it's such an important part of people's lives. Prior to starting Exaquio, I was the global employer brand leader for Marriott International, and I've spent some time in HR consulting and in a number of other in-house HR roles too.
Yeah, and let's talk a little bit about employer brand. I mean, right at the gate. So, I don't know if you heard the intro and I was mentioning, you're one of the leading global experts on employer brand. I know it's one of the kind of topics that we're both really passionate about and interested in. This is a really weird time for employer brand. I mean, it's a real time for everything, right? Like every time I say that, I cringe a little bit because it's like, let's talk about the obvious. But yeah, it's a weird time for employer brand. And so I'm curious to get your perspective. Like for somebody who has a really strong grasp on the field and what's happening globally, how have you seen companies and employer branding teams begin to shift how they think about employer brand kind of during these COVID times?
Yeah, so it's super interesting. I think there's been a real bifurcated difference in response based on whether as an organization you see employer brand as strategic or you see employer brand almost purely as recruitment marketing, right? Where it's really just about marketing and advertising and content. I think the organizations that fall in that latter bucket, they're in a position where the employer brand leaders are sort of sit and wait. Those are when we did a global survey of 80 employer brand leaders, and many of the folks that are in those roles didn't have the ability to update content. They didn't have the ability to reference the COVID-19 crisis, and they had to kind of sit and wait. They also didn't have a seat at the table in the actual response itself. The organizations that see employer brand as strategy and they think about it as branding and marketing the entirety of the employment experience, and they think about it as how do we uncover the relationship that our employees have with our organization and vice versa, those organizations had a much more practiced response. They got ahead of the challenge. They were out immediately with communications on their career sites. They had a plan to communicate to candidates, and they had their audiences ready to go. And that's really been the difference. And so those folks that didn't have that or had to sit and wait are now kind of scrambling and in this space of, shoot, we better catch up because things are going to change here dramatically when this sort of settles down.
Yeah, let's talk about that content for a second, because I've had some conversations and I've had some clients even that I've been working with that are, they're struggling a bit with like what's the right kind of content to be sharing right now? What do candidates want to know? And I think for me, you know, one of the things I think is really interesting is this whole, you know, situation has created this unique convergence between CSR, corporate social responsibility, and employer brand, right? Because I think candidates, they don't care how many different, you know, custom kombuchas you have on tap at an office, because they're not going to your office right now. And we don't know when they're going to be. And some might not be. And so I think, you know, the messaging, you have a lot of companies that have, you know, they had their we love roadmaps, right? So they have their 2020 content calendar and roadmap, and then this happens and boom, like you've got to kind of blow it all up and start over. So like what messaging should employer brand, you know, leaders and practitioners be thinking about right now? What kind of content will really kind of land in a place that is real and authentic and helpful to prospects?
So it's a really interesting question. I'm lucky in that my husband actually does crisis PR for a living. And one of the things he's always said is that it's most important to communicate. And if you don't, silence sends a message in and of itself. So not only do you need to have a practiced, measured response ready to go, but you also have to be able to turn on a dime. And if you've got nothing to say, you can't just be silent. You have to tell people, we have nothing to say right now. There is a company called North Rock Partners. We'll have some examples in a blog post up in the next day or so on our website. And they did this amazing job of immediately communicating to candidates in the most transparent way. They said, hey, we don't know what we're going to do yet. So they started out by using language and words to say, we know you're in the middle of this process right now. And to be honest, it probably feels like purgatory to a lot of candidates. And, you know, we don't know what we're going to do. So let us think about it. And, you know, we need to figure out what our strategy is and figure out how this plays out. And in the meantime, we promise that we'll communicate to you. We promise that we'll keep you posted. And they've done a, you know, a really good job of doing that. So the companies that are responding and being honest and vulnerable and transparent, even when they don't know exactly what the plan is, they're the ones that are succeeding. And it's interesting because as much as I love saying employer brand needs to be more strategic, like our partners on the marketing side, we can't forget that your employment with any organization is a relationship. And the more vulnerable and transparent and honest that you are in your relationships, the more successful those relationships are, right? That's psychology research that we know to be true. And if we can take that and apply it appropriately to the employment experience and the relationships we have with employees and the relationships they have with us, we'll be more successful. So I think that that's really important. And then the other piece that's important is making sure you actually know how employees feel. Qualtrics did a really nice job with the templates that they had to do pulse checks. And it's really important, of course, to check on mental health and well-being. But what most companies aren't prepared to do is to find out what employee expectations are. So to your point, Lars, about, you know, nobody cares about kombucha right now. Did they even really care in the first place? Did you go and ask them what matters most to them in the employment experience? And not just, you know, what do you want to get from working with us? But like, what's important to you in your life? That's where the relationship piece comes into play, is what relationship do we have with you and what's important to you? I think the biggest trend coming out of all of this will be customization like we have never seen before in terms of the employment experience.
Yeah, and I'd love to get into, I mean, it's hard to make predictions in this kind of an environment because nobody knows what's going on, but it's fun to think about it, you know, it's fun. It's an interesting thought exercise to imagine what will be changed on the other side of this, whatever that might be. And I guess, you know, as you mentioned, you know, things to kind of look forward to on the other side from an employee experience standpoint, things being very different and much more customization. Yeah. What do you see for the future of employer brand, right? When we're on, let's just, again, don't know what the horizon is, but we're on the other side of this. You know, things have, whatever they will look like, they've stabilized into that. What do you think employer brand looks like then? How is it different from where it is, where it is today and really where it's been over the last, you know, kind of 7 years?
So I'm excited because I think there's going to be this shift that truly is going to be focused now on the role employer brand can and should play. In very few organizations does employer brand play a macro role. And interestingly enough, I've argued often that employer brand should actually be HR, the same way that, you know, at Walmart, for example, they just hired a new CMO. That CMO reports to the chief customer experience officer, right? So the idea is that technically you should have a senior leader that runs HR that's responsible for the experience. And that's where I think the future of employer brand will be, is driving HR to process, from process to experience. HR historically, without getting too geeky, because there's already a few people, maybe only me, it geeks out on the stuff, but without getting too geeky, you know, HR has always been process driven. Everything we do in HR is a response to an actual process that has to happen. So if we think back all the way to like the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire of the 1800s and why labor unions began, it was all to create process, safety processes, processes in terms of hiring, processes in terms of benefits and welfare. And so instead of being strategic, HR grew up in this process-driven environment. And then, of course, more recently, we got really, you know, sort of hot on the marketing side about experiences. So now HR is all like, oh, we need to create experiences, which is great, except that's really hard to do when your functions have historically always been entirely process-driven. So for me, the biggest change to employer brand is going to be the ability for organizations to say, hey, in order to create experiences, we have to put the employee at the center. And I'm really excited to stop seeing, you know, like you talked about roadmaps and process charts that show the process of hiring as things like selection and, you know, map out all the technologies we use. Yes, that's great, but that's not what the employee sees. That's not how they feel. And so empathy is going to play a huge role moving forward in how we build employer brands. And I'm excited about that. It's long overdue that we actually are empathetic about, you know, how our people feel and what matters to them.
Yeah. And when you think about that, like, I think you have, there's the forward-looking piece, right? Of like, how are we looking on the other side of this? There's the, obviously the real piece that we're in right now. A lot of companies are, you know, they're reducing headcount. They're trimming, recruiting, they're trimming open positions, right? So they're scaling back hiring. In terms of employer brand today, like what messaging is most important? Like, would you recommend, for example, as a practice, companies that are hiring, or frankly, even ones that are not, you know, updating their career site with some specific language around like how they're responding to COVID?
Yeah, for sure. Because people want to know, if I'm a candidate and I come to your site and there's jobs open, how am I going to know if that job is legit, right? Are you one of these healthcare companies that's actively hiring right now? Or are you a company that is totally on hold because you don't have cash flow or because leadership didn't have a crisis plan to begin with? So that's where the communication really comes into play. You've got to at least communicate, say, here's where we are. So I think that's, you know, step number one for sure. Step number two really depends on the kind of organization you are. And I'll give you an example. Montage International, they're a hotel company based in California. They have another brand also called Pendry Hotels. And as you can imagine, they're severely impacted throughout this entire experience. And what they've decided to do after doing all of their crisis communication, right, and making all of the, you know, strategic HR decisions they needed to make around hiring and operations decisions about opening and closing different hotels, they decided to figure out, how do we keep everybody engaged during this time? So they have this amazing newsletter that's going out to all of their associates right now. And what it does is it repurposes what their associates would originally be doing. But it also takes into account the reality of the situation. So their chefs right now are creating meals that you can create on $5 a day. So for these hourly associates that are, you know, really struggling because they've got unemployment, but, you know, they don't know what the future is like, they have the ability to learn from the chefs and to interact with their associates. So the engagement is there, the understanding and the reality of the situation is there. And then they're also making sure that they're, you know, keeping people working. So even though, you know, these chefs, there's only so many home meals they can create for their own families, and it makes them feel good that they can practice their craft. And that's just one of, you know, a million things they're doing. They've repurposed the kids programs at the hotel, and they're creating kids programs for parents to use at home. But it goes specifically to their associates. And I think it's the perfect example, you know, of how to pivot and to continue to communicate. And it really drives their employer brand. And we have to remember, employer brand is not just about recruitment. It truly is branding and marketing the entirety of the employment experience. That's probably going to be one of the biggest fallouts after this, is that employees will make a decision. How did my company handle the situation? And do I want to stay with them when all of this is said and done?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point. I think candidates are definitely going to be mindful of how companies responded during this. And that's going to be a data point that they're going to look at when it comes to assessing whether they might want to work for you in the future. With the example you use, I mean, employer brand right now is all about the kind of content that hopefully you're able to share is about how are you being helpful, right? As a company, how are you taking care of your employees? How are you giving back in the community when you can? You know, those are the kind of stories that there is an appetite for and frankly an interest in, because people want to know, like, how are companies navigating through this? And so I've seen some companies that to this day, you know, their CEO hasn't even sent an all hands message internally. That's rare, but even externally, like, you know, every company should have an external blog post on their company blog from their CEO talking about what they're doing, how they're taking care of employees, how they're navigating these waters, how they're thinking about return to work. You know, that's a massively, massively complex beast that, you know, HR leaders and business leaders are now just starting to kind of wrestle with, especially here in the States. You know, we have some states that are already beginning to open up. And so the complexity involved with figuring out, you know, all the different things you have to have in place as a business to ensure that you can safely bring any employees back into the office, you know, is mind-boggling. So that there's so much to consider there. And that, I think, from a framing standpoint around the kind of content people care about, it's that, right? It's not the things that we thought were important. And to your point, you know, those might not have even been researched things, right? Like, of course, everybody wants to know about our ping pong table. Like, no. Nobody wants to know about your ping pong. Nobody cares about that.
No, not at all. And, you know, it's funny you say that, because I think that there's a lot of organizations that are being silent because they don't, it goes back to that they just don't have anything to say. Yeah. But you can at least give people comfort to say, okay, my leadership team has their ducks in a row because they're telling us they're working on a return to work plan. Even if you don't have it yet, tell us what you're doing. Because if you don't, we will make assumptions. And, you know, it's so funny. I've been funny in an ironic sense. I've been through, like you, we've been, you know, in this business a while. And so this is the third kind of downturn that I've been through. And the very first one that I personally went through after 9/11, I was working for a large global consulting firm doing HR consulting at the time. And I remember after that all happened, you know, we were all road warriors. And they gathered us all back in the conference room 2 weeks later. And they were like, you know, we're back to business. You guys all have to get back on the road immediately. And, you know, I was the vocal one. I raised my hand and I said, but what if we don't feel comfortable getting back on the plane? And I still feel like chills thinking about that story, because I was so nervous to actually ask the question. And the answer was, well, then this might not be the place for you to work.
Yeah.
And I remember just being dumbfounded. I didn't know how to respond to that. So I got back on the road, and a couple weeks later, there was a plane crash in New York. It wasn't terrorist related, but I was sitting in LaGuardia at the time, and the anxiety was so palpable because I thought my job made me feel this way. Yeah. So I think that's where the empathy and the pieces come into play, is we can have a formal process to return to work, but what if people aren't comfortable? What if, because of all these different states, your state has opened up, but maybe another one hasn't? I live in South Carolina, and, you know, we're somewhat opened up in a little bit. We're not like Georgia, our neighbor, right? Georgia's made big strides to open up. You know, no, I don't think it's necessarily, everybody's got an opinion on whether you should or shouldn't. But if you're, you know, a multinational or a national company, and you've got people in multiple states, you got to think about how people are going to feel. Because that's what comes first before this process of, I'm going back to work, you know, I have to use the Clorox wipes in my office or whatever it might be.
Yeah, I mean, I think the reality too is, you know, this is such, the way that people are responding to this and processing this is so individual in terms of their own circumstances, right? Like, you don't know who has underlying health conditions. You don't know who has kids at home and their schools are closed. You don't know who's taking care of their parents. You know, there's so many different factors that will make that decision different yep. for every single one of your employees. And so, you know, you can't have a return to work program that doesn't account for that and how you're gonna allow people to opt in or yeah. out of coming in the office right now. And so, mm-hmm. you know, speaking of like yeah. parenting, managing all that, you know, you have the founder and CEO of a company, you have a company, you have employees, you have clients, you have that whole ecosystem to take care of as the CEO. You know, you're a mom, you've got two kids at home with you. You have a husband who also, as you mentioned, is in, you know, crisis comms and he's working from home. How are you managing all of that? And I shouldn't say managing as if it's like a thing that is a well-held machine. Like, how are you attempting to yeah. manage all of those different kind of pushes and pulls yeah. In different directions?
I mean, barely. I'll be completely honest. It's probably been the hardest period of my life. You know, I think, so when we started brainstorming, we brainstormed a couple weeks ago about the future of work. And one of the things that I drew on my big whiteboard here is a bunch of concentric circles. And it's, you know, kind of like what they called the 9/11 effect after 9/11, where who's the first person you called, you know, after that happened. And so I started mapping out who are all the people in my life and, you know, whether it's work, whether it's friends I need to check in on, family, of course, and then, you know, employees, clients, all of that. And that's been the hardest part is I don't feel like I'm connecting the way that I should with everybody. Relationships are so important to me. My husband and I have zero time together and we both get that. I don't feel like I'm being present for my kids. Right now, our schedule typically is that I take the kids from 8 to 12. My husband gets them from 12 to 4. Between 4 and 5:30, we play my favorite game known as who's got the more important phone call. And then we do family time 5:30 to 8, you know, dinner, bath, bed. My kids are little to almost 3 and 5. And then we're back online from 8 to midnight or 1. So it's absolutely exhausting. I keep joking. I always said I would never get Botox, but man, looking at the lines, like after all of this, I feel like I've aged 5 years. Not to mention all of the other things. I'm barely keeping up with friends that I should be checking in on because they've got challenges. My dad has Alzheimer's. He's home with my mom. And so I try to check in on her every day because she's his sole caretaker and it's a really challenging existence. And then, you know, all of the other people. So I wish more people would that are in leadership positions would be open and honest about how freaking hard this is. You know, I think you've got to be careful, right? Like we're still managing all of our work. We're doing a great job of it. We've got plenty of capacity as a team to continue to take on work and serve our clients. But my favorite question to ask in every single call is, hey, before we talk about anything related to work, how are you? Not, you know, the usual like, oh, this coronavirus stinks and, you know, I'm, you know, eating or cooking another meal or whatever it is from home, but how are you really? Like, how are you faring? And that's where we're getting kind of the real nuggets about how people truly are doing. But it's hard. It's really hard.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate your candor in sharing that. And I think that it is important, I think, especially for leaders, to be able to talk about that, right? Because I think that leadership sets the tone for an organization. And if you have leaders that are, you know, have this air about them of like, oh, we're on top of it. Everything is, you know, everything is fine. I don't even just mean from a business perspective. I mean, just like a general, you know, kind of blinders on to the circumstances that everybody's in, that erodes trust. And you've got to be able to kind of own, you know, where you are. And the reality is like, I don't, you know, I haven't talked yet to anybody who is not struggling on some level or another. I don't know how you can't not be to one extent or another, just given the circumstances and all the different things that that impacts, whether it's uncertainty for the future, you know, concerns about health, you know, thinking about mortality in different ways that maybe you didn't before when this hits close to home for people. So I think that it's you know, there's a mental health burden of this that I think is also really real, and hopefully we can continue to talk about openly to let everybody know that, you know, they're not alone in their struggles. Like everybody is struggling to different degrees with the circumstances. And, you know, one of the things that I've really been impressed with, not just your leadership, but Exactio's leadership, is when it comes to, you know, you've seen instances of the community really stepping up in, you know, HR and people ops and recruiting and branding. doing what they can to help their peers and to kind of rally around each other. And so you've been really at the forefront of that with contributing to the open source resources, and certainly the document that I created. You've absolutely helped me curate that, make that better. But I'm curious, so one of the things that you had started working on now and recently launched was a return to work kind of conversation framework. And so I do want to share that for viewers so they can check that out. But I'd love to, I'm going to jump out, I'll do a share screen to pull that up. But I'd love to just learn a little bit more about where that came from, what went into that, and how people can use it.
Well, first and foremost, a huge shout out to you, because I think you are one of the very first people to respond at all. And I think it's so important for people to see that leadership. I think selflessness is the most important thing right now. You know, people over profits always. That's the business that we're in. So one of the things that our team started talking about was, so exactly, I didn't mention this, but we are 100% work from home. We've always been. And I always struggled, you know, when I was thinking about having kids years ago, how am I going to do this? How am I going to make this work? So when I started Exactio, that was my intention. And so one of our colleagues, Jackie Wallet, she's fantastic. She had this idea to say, okay, how do we take our learnings at Exactio? Because we're so used to working remotely. You know, this is comfortable for us. Everyone on our team has experience working this way. How do we help everybody who are totally new? Of course, there's a ton of different ideas, right? There's like, you know, make sure you have a great workspace and lighting and, you know, whatever it might be. But what we haven't really gotten to the sort of heart of is, how do you work from home and communicate to your boss, your manager, your team as to what you're working on? So these are really cool downloadable templates. You don't need to submit your email or anything. You can go right to our website, exactio.com/COVID-19, and they're in the action plans and tools section. And it's a one pager that's totally updatable. So you can imagine sharing this with your manager every week. At the top, you kind of track, here's where you are. There's a My State of the Union to share how you're feeling, you know, what's going on with you personally. There's a place to talk about who you're networking and connecting with so that you can say like, hey, here's who I'm learning from, or here's who I'm finding out what they're struggling with right now. You can track your own capacity. One of the biggest challenges out of all of this hasn't just been remote work. It's been that parents or people who have other responsibilities they didn't have before are now working these odd hours, right? Like, I can't expect my team to be online at midnight when I am, if that works for me. So it's sharing your core hours and then also saying like, this week, this is what I can give. And then underneath that, there's a four block where you can track, here's what I'm able to maintain. Here are the roadblocks, the things in my way. Here are the things that I want to start or be proactive on that I know we need now that perhaps we didn't need before. And here's either what I'm finishing or just isn't going to get done. So you can remind yourself consistently. It's almost like a parking lot, if you will, of the stuff you were working on pre all of when this happened to afterwards. So hopefully these things will be helpful for people beyond just the like, you know, you got to use Zoom and you need to, you know, have a chat tool. Hopefully there'll be some things people can really learn from.
Yeah, Zoom, it was interesting. I'm chuckling actually as I think about Zoom and I think about your earlier comment around Botox. I think like we're all staring at our faces on these screens for hours and hours every day. Like the plastic surgery, Botox, like they're going to see a boom at some point, because I think it was like, I'm not made. And I'm like, Jesus, what are these wrinkles, these lines? Like, I mean,
We didn't use video this much. We were 100% remote. We've never used video as much as we're using it right now.
Well, it's a trip. I think there's a lot of people who aren't that comfortable with video, right? And it's like, well, you kind of got to get over that right now and as best you can. It's been awesome. I appreciate the candor. I appreciate the openness and vulnerability, and I certainly appreciate your contributions to the community with that guide. I want to close with one bit, which if you've seen the show before, you know that we always close out with one good thing. So
yeah,
I'm going to turn that over to you. What is one good thing from your last week you want to share?
So for me, it is stuff like this. So this is a note that my daughter wrote to my husband. It says, I love you, Peter, which is my husband's name, Scarlett. As a working parent, it's really hard sometimes to send your kids off to daycare or school every day. And those of you that have kids and do this know that we make tough choices as moms and dads, you know, whether to stay home or whether to send our kids off. And so for me, one good thing has been, as hard as it is, I am spending so much time with my kids, and it almost makes me emotional because it reminds me that I work for a reason and that what I do is for them and to help them grow. But you know, getting these notes, like my daughter will slide them under my office door. And, you know, when you're having a tough day and you're like, how am I going to make it? it changes everything, which is awesome.
Yeah, that I really appreciate you sharing that, and I can relate. And I think as parents, we probably all have our different mementos.
Yes, right? It's the best part of your day.
Yeah, it's like, you know, you see that, and you know, it's interesting. Like I'm an optimist. I always look for silver linings. I think for those of us who are parents, like having that opportunity and like it's not one of the most ideal times, you know, obviously, but like having this time that we can spend with them. And I think as parents, like that's the most important responsibility we have, right? Is like making sure they weather this in as positive of a way as possible. And so, I appreciate you sharing that. And definitely, I echo those sentiments for sure.
Well, thank you so much for having me. Thank you for all you're doing. You're just an amazing leader and role model during this time, and especially everything you're doing to champion mental health. We didn't talk about that today, but that'll be a big outcome of all of this. And, you know, as people leaders, we're going to have to play a big role because there is no such thing as work and home anymore. It's all one big messy existence.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're absolutely right. And I think we've got to be, you know, spending some extra time looking out for each other. And again, just following leadership, and I just really appreciate you being kind of real and vulnerable and open, and just, you know that I can relate to all you're saying, and I imagine a lot of viewers can as well. So thanks so much for coming on. Definitely wishing you all the best as we all continue to navigate this, and keep up the great work on all the open source and community support resources, because they definitely make a difference. So I'm going to, if you're watching, if you're on LinkedIn, I added a link to the document. I added it on Facebook as well. I'll also tweet it out after this. So if you want to download that return to work communication guide from Zach Weo, we'll make that easy to find. And then I'll be back tomorrow at noon, same time, noon Eastern. So we're going to be back tomorrow with Jill McCree and Adam Ward for GDB Talent, both global recruiting leaders who now have a consultancy that helps high scale-ups and startups grow. And they've done some interesting analysis and reports from the recruiting community on how they're responding to COVID. And so I'm excited to dig into the results of that survey with them tomorrow. So that's a wrap for today. Take care of each other, and we'll see you tomorrow. Take care.
Bye, everybody.